WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we spoke earlier in the week about the light, or so it appears to many people, punishment given by the NYPD to Officer Richard Neary, who shot and killed an innocent 19-year-old, Timothy Stansberry, 3 years ago this month. That was the incident where Officer Neary was patrolling a rooftop looking for drug dealers in the Louis Armstrong houses in Bed-Stuy, and Stansberry entered the roof as a shortcut to another building, and Neary shot him. Neary says his gun went off accidentally, but the police investigation determined he did not have it properly secured. A grand jury declined to indict Neary, and then an NYPD judge recommended his penalty be merely a loss of 30 vacation days and that he get to keep his gun. Then over the Christmas New Year's week, Police Commissioner Kelly issued the final decision on a punishment, increasing it to a 30-day suspension without pay. Plus, Neary has to permanently forfeit his gun. He'll have a desk job now in the property clerk's office. Timothy Stansberry's mother says she feels Kelly spit in her face with a punishment so light. Our two guests earlier in the week both were critical of the NYPD's decision. We will speak now with someone who is more supportive, Richard Aborn, a former Manhattan prosecutor who is now in business as a consultant to police departments and is president of the Citizens Crime Commission of New York City, a criminal justice think tank. He will take us behind the scenes on how the internal police department disciplinary process works and also tell us, I gather, why he thinks it did work properly in this case. Mr. Aborn, thanks for coming back on WNYC today. Good morning.
Good morning. Always a pleasure to be with you, Brian.
I want you to first explain your understanding of what exactly did happen on that rooftop as far as we can tell. If we accept Officer Neary's account that he fired his gun by accident but had failed to properly secure it, what does that actually mean happen? What does secure it mean in that sense?
Secure it means that there's a finding that he improperly unholstered the gun or improperly discharged it. There is a controversy over whether or not officers should be allowed to have their guns out when they're doing these so-called vertical patrols. Vertical patrols mean, much like officers who walk a beat, vertical patrol means people that officers at patrol housing projects will walk up and down the stairways and patrol the roofs looking for illegal activity, drug trading, sexual abuse crimes, trespassing, etc. And that's what Stansberry Neary and his partner were doing. It was a January night in 04. They were on the roof of the building. Neary had his gun out. They were approaching a door that led to a stairwell, and Stansberry either pushed the door open just as Neary was going to open it, or Neary opened it just as Stansberry was standing there, and Neary had his gun out and fired once, he said accidentally. And tragically, Stansberry was killed. He fell a couple flights of stairs and died on the scene.
One of the guests we had the other day, retired Detective Graham Witherspoon of the Group 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement Who Care, had this to say about that part of the incident.
With regard to Neary saying it was an accident, it wouldn't really be an accident. The gun was in his hand. He was patrolling a building with a weapon in his hand, which is number one, contrary to all police procedure. He wasn't responding to a condition. We're not trained to run or move around with a gun in our hand when there is no probable cause to do so. And had his holster, had he not been afraid, I believe he was just basically afraid in doing his job. Had he had his weapon in his holster, the shot never would have been fired.
Do you agree with all or most of that?
Well, I think that's probably correct, that had the gun been in the holster, the shot wouldn't have been fired because Neary may have had another second to think about this, although we don't know that for sure. But I don't think the detective is correct when he says the shooting wasn't accidental. I don't think there was an accusation that he intentionally shot Stansfair. I think I've actually never heard anyone argue that.
Even accepting Neary's version of events, he failed to follow a basic NYPD gun safety rule and killed an innocent person as a result. Is that only worth a 30-day suspension?
You know, before I respond to that, let me point out one thing. I don't think it's so clear that he failed to follow a basic NYPD procedure. I think there's actually been some real ambiguity about that. The general rule is that an officer can take out their weapon when they subjectively, they themselves believe, that there is a reason to do so, that they are in some danger. That doesn't mean they can walk around with their gun out all the time, but they have to be able to articulate some reason as to why they took their gun out. There are also many officers who aren't.
Does that include generalized fear, way that Detective Witherspoon described it? Or apparently this is what the NYPD found, that he had drawn his weapon improperly.
Well, I think Neary was a housing officer. He'd come into the housing side of the NYPD. And there are a number of officers who have told me that housing for a long time had a rule that when they do rooftop patrol, they actually do have their weapons out. They're advised to have their weapons out. And I think that needs to be cleared up. It's been less than clear from the NYPD whether or not that's the rule or not. Even the NYPD spokesman, Paul Brown, over the weekend was saying that there is no specific rule articulating whether or not they can have their guns out when they're on the rooftop. And I think we do need clarity about that.
So you're saying
the officers need it.
Right. So this is really a different wrinkle, frankly, than I've seen or heard in the press, because you're saying it's not a case of him violating a police rule necessarily and getting this 30-day suspension as a punishment for it after it resulted in a death. He may or may not even have violated a rule, in your opinion.
I think it's unclear. And in fact, when he was charged by the police department for failure to safeguard the weapon, which, by the way, can include the accidental shooting. It's a funny titled charge, but it can include the accidental shooting. He did not plead guilty or not guilty. He entered into what's called a mitigation plea, in which he essentially admits the facts but says, here's why it happened. So there was no trial within the police department over what the events were or what the police department policy was. And then let me
follow up on what you just
sure.
said, because he admitted to the facts there, and the general take on this is that he did violate a police rule. I understand you're saying there's some doubt about that, but you've been a prosecutor.
Right.
If a truck driver, let's say, fails to follow his company's safety rules, like how to secure his brakes, for example, and he accidentally kills a pedestrian as a result, isn't he likely to get criminally indicted on something like criminally negligent homicide or reckless endangerment?
It would depend on how much he knew. If he knew that the brakes were likely to fail and he disregarded that knowledge, then yes, there could be an indictment in that case. As all of us who drive know, sometimes your brakes squeak, and if his brakes were just squeaking and he had no idea they were going to fail, then no, he would not be indicted. It depends on how much the officer, or in your case, the truck driver, knew at the time the incident occurred.
So that's what a grand jury probably looked at?
Yes.
What do you think Neary would have had to have known to be indictable, assuming he broke a police rule in this case?
Assuming he broke a police rule, which, and I don't want to muddle this too much, but that's really irrelevant to the grand jury proceeding, because now we're jumping between the grand jury proceeding and the internal police department proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
But on the grand jury proceeding, he would have had to either disregard some risk that a reasonable person would have understood, or he would have had to act intentionally.
But isn't in fact the police rule relevant to a potential grand jury indictment? Because if they're determining whether he should have known that he was acting irresponsibly, it's the rule of the department that sets up the parameters of responsible action.
No, it's the parameters of responsible action for the police officer are adjudged in the internal police department proceeding. The rule as to his conduct in front of the grand jury, which is the criminal proceeding, the far more serious proceeding, is judged by what's called a reasonable man standard. So the failure to follow the police department rule would not necessarily be relevant to the grand jury proceeding.
Richard
but
Abor.
It's terribly, but it's totally relevant, and I'm trying to be clear, but it's totally relevant to the internal police department proceeding. And Brian, can I just mention one other thing?
Sure.
You said that he got a 30-day suspended sentence, which is correct.
Suspension without pay.
Suspension without pay. He also lost his gun. He will never get his gun back, and he's permanently assigned to his desk job. He's also been put on what's called one-year dismissal probation, which means for any infraction that he might commit in the police department for the next year, he will be dismissed. He could be dismissed. And frankly, it's a no due process procedure. He would not even get a hearing on that. This points out a problem under the city charter in my mind, because the suspension is for 30 days, but in reality, the police commissioner has no discretion between 30 days and dismissal when it comes to actually punishing an officer.
If so, he does something else.
Yeah. Even in this case, if the police commissioner, for instance, wanted to suspend him without pay for 6 months or 9 months or a year, he couldn't do that.
The city
charter says the maximum suspension is 30 days.
Oh.
Then the next level of punishment is dismissal.
Uh-huh.
And that's something I think we need to address.
Right. There aren't enough gradations there, it sounds
precisely.
Like. So, but on Neary forfeiting his weapon and being reassigned to a desk job, how many cops would give up the risk of street patrol for a safe but uniform desk job and consider that a good thing?
I frankly think very few. I work with cops all the time, all over the U.S. and in Europe, and they want to be out in the streets doing policing. Being assigned to a desk job is by no means considered a benefit. They dread it. In fact, it's considered a punishment. Are there some officers out there who would rather be behind a desk and not on the streets? Of course, undoubtedly. But the vast number of these people that serve in policing want to serve. They want to be out there in the public eye enforcing the law.
The internal NYPD judge who recommended this loss of 30 vacation days in exchange for this life, 30 vacation days, that's less than the final penalty as Police Commissioner Kelly upped
Correct.
It. You understand why that seems grotesque to a lot of people, right?
Absolutely. I totally. And in fact, I understand totally why that is. And I do think this is something the city council should be thinking about, whether or not they should give the police commissioner greater gradations, as you called, and that's exactly the right word, punishment. Yeah, the 30 days vacation is wholly insufficient. In fact, I believe the trial judge did not even recommend that he lose his weapon.
Right, but that's right. And I'm talking about now the difference between the trial judge and the police commissioner. The trial judge didn't even recommend that he lose his weapon, as you say,
right.
And didn't even recommend that he get any suspension without pay, just
right.
the loss of 30 vacation days. And so I'm curious, who are these judges? Who appoints these judges?
The judges are appointed by the police commissioner. They are generally lawyers who have a fair amount, even substantial trial experience, usually in the criminal courts, either on the defense side or as prosecutors, and are frequently lawyers that have had criminal experience have also done some administrative work. So they may have been an inspector general in one of the city agencies or an assistant inspector general in addition to the trial experience.
Is that sufficiently independent to be appointed by the police commissioner?
You have just touched on one of the biggest controversies in policing, which is whether or not police departments should be allowed to police themselves. And the general trend in the United States is that there's an internal disciplinary proceeding generally allowed to be conducted by the police department, but very often subject to external oversight. And that's something the NYPD and the New York City Council have struggled with over the years, and I suspect may get revisited at some point.
Richard Abor from the Citizens Crime Commission, my guest on WNYC for just another couple of minutes. One more thing on this punishment. The New York Sun this week quotes the chairwoman of the Department of Law and Police Science at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, Maki Haberfeld, who said the police department's internal discipline was set up to deal with the officer's break with police policy, not the outcome. So if Neary failed to secure his weapon and no one was hurt, the punishment would be the same, according to her, as if he failed to secure his weapon and someone got killed, as happened in this case. Is that your understanding?
The concept in some ways is correct, that it's set up to deal with the internal violations of police procedures. Whether or not the punishment would have been the same is mere speculation. I suspect, frankly, the answer is no, it would not have been the same. But I think Kelly reached for the maximum that he could do short of dismissal because, frankly, his hands were tied. He couldn't give him a heavier sentence.
And he thought dismissal was too much.
He obviously thought dismissal was too much. I don't think an officer has ever been fired for an accidental discharge. This, once again, much like the Bell shooting, points to issues of training. The NYPD has announced yesterday that they're bringing the RAND Corporation to review their training. I think that's a very healthy thing for them to do. And I think you'll see a lot of question about not only the fire range training, when they offer target practice, that training, but there'll also be a lot of discussion about whether or not they're being put in the simulators that uses computer technology to replicate the conditions that officers might confront out in the streets to train them to understand the kind of split-second decisions they're going to have to make. And I think they'll also review the training on this phenomenon of contagious fire.
Last thing, while you're here, if I can move to the Sean Bell case.
Sure.
One of the other victims, Trent Benefield, was ticketed this week for loitering with the intent to gamble at a storefront in Harlem. This comes after the police raids on some of Sean Bell's friends, where one of them was arrested on the pretense of an outstanding $25 ticket so he could be questioned on the fourth man with a gun theory. Are police harassing Sean Bell's friends to help their case?
I certainly hope not. There have been three incidents, I believe. I haven't heard that there's been a lot of harassment going on. There have been these arrests, and sometimes people are arrested or ticketed so that prosecutors are given a chance to speak with them. But I haven't heard there's been a lot of harassment. I hope that doesn't happen. That would really be the wrong thing to do and would compound an already tense situation.
I guess I just wonder, would you or I ever be arrested for one outstanding $25 ticket? Would you or I be busted if we were holding a poker game?
Probably not, but I don't know if you have a dog. If you ever walk your dog in the park and you let it off the leash, you're going to get a ticket, and I don't care what color you are. So the police do give out a lot of tickets, a lot of summonses. But, yeah, are there racial factors in these things? Sure. I think it'd be naive to deny that.
Richard Ayborn is president of the Citizens Crime Commission of New York City, a criminal justice think tank, former Manhattan prosecutor, and now a private consultant to police departments. Thanks so much for all your views on these things. We really appreciate it, as always.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up. So what are you going to do when it's, like, 70 degrees out this weekend? Stay with us. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.